This podcast is intended to support UK healthcare professionals with education. The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment, and patients are encouraged to consult healthcare providers, including nurses, for any medical questions or concerns.
Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional, where healthcare professionals and experts by experience discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. I'm Hannah Patterson. I've worked in specialist care and I'm currently the Ostomy Care Associate Education Manager at Coloplast. This time, I'm joined by expert by experience, Brian Devlin.
I wish I'd done it 10 years previously. It made such a huge difference to me. Getting people talking about it, that's the key to breaking down stigma in my experience. It's been the same with mental health until relatively recently. People were frightened to talk about mental health. So hopefully these things are changing the more people are a bit courageous.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. So today, as I said, I'm joined by Brian Devlin, Coloplast Ambassador. So hi, Brian. Thank you for joining me.
Hi there. Lovely to speak to you.
Brian, some people may remember, the eagle-eared amongst our listeners may recognise you from last week's Ask the Ostomer. Now, it's the first time I've actually spoken to Brian on a podcast, and his answers in last week's Ask the Ostomer were so amazing that I fully admit, the second we finished recording, I was on the phone, well, I would say asking Brian, but telling Brian he needed to come and record a podcast with me on his own. So hopefully, Brian, I've not got you here under too much duress and you're looking forward to this.
No pressure.
So I know we met you briefly last week, but just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I live on the Black Isle, which is north of Inverness, up in the very north of Britain. I worked in NHS for a long time as in the PR sector, that's the public relations and media management side of things. Prior to that, I had various jobs in health promotion. Started off my working career in the drugs scene, actually, and I worked in the heroin users in Edinburgh in the mid-1980s. That was when HIV and AIDS started to become a real big issue. And in Edinburgh, Edinburgh was regarded as the AIDS capital of Europe in those days because HIV was being transmitted through shared needles and syringes and paraphernalia rather than through sexual routes. Not exclusively, but largely. So we had a problem with needles and syringes being shared. So I worked in the AIDS field for a number of years in Edinburgh. Prior to that, about 40 years ago, I was a Catholic priest. So I moved from being a Catholic priest to large-scale distributor of condoms amongst people in Edinburgh was a big shock for the system at the time. So I became a very vocal HIV and AIDS campaigner because back in the day, still is, but lesser, back in the day, HIV and AIDS was greatly feared and hugely stigmatised. And people were very frightened of the myths around HIV and AIDS. So part of my job, as well as working with clients who were heroin users and trying to get them, you know, to have a less chaotic life, part of my role morphed into some sort of HIV and AIDS stigma buster. And, you know, looking back on it, I think that same sort of drive about stopping stigma, stopping bullying around issues that people don't really understand is something that stays with me. And you know, I think I feel very strongly about it in terms of stomas and colostomies, which is what I have.
Absolutely. I say there's almost, from being almost like an unnatural journey at the start from being a Catholic priest into then, I say, working very closely alongside heroin users, AIDS people and things like that. Then, like you say, you speak about the stigma and actually, like you say, a lot of problems within healthcare, there are stigmas attached to them. Mm, mm. I said back in the 80s, AIDS, there was a massive stigma around AIDS. People didn't want to go into toilets by people that got AIDS, HIV. There was massive stigmas. I mean, I grew up in the era of like Freddie Mercury, where he was almost vilified at that point. And fortunately, now we are going through an era now where it's more accepted, it's more known. And I think what really sticks with me is it's actually lack of knowledge that the stigma comes from. And I think that this is where you and I are so very, very similar, that we want to beat that stigma by creating that knowledge and awareness. Now, you touched on the fact you've got a colostomy there. So how long have you had your colostomy for? And remind us of the reason.
Okay, so I've had the colostomy since 2017. So what's that, about 7 years, 8 years and about? I suffered for about 25 years of recurring perianal fistulas, which are a blockage, a breakage, a little thin breakage through the bowel wall into my skin. And every time one of those happened, and they would happen maybe, say, 2 or 3 times a year, I would have to have it drained under and examined under anaesthetic. And it was excruciatingly painful. I mean, it really exquisitely painful. And lost a lot of time at work and stuff like that. So I think what happened, they presumed that I had Crohn's disease, but actually another doctor actually read my notes, which by that time were, you know, massive. And she said, no, you don't have any evidence of Crohn's disease. You've got all of the symptoms, but you don't have any evidence of it in terms of histology and stuff like that. So I'm a bit of an unknown quantity as to why I had what I had. But basically what happened to me was, because of all of the scarring with the multiple examinations under anaesthetic, I think that they said that my sphincter was damaged, badly scarred, and so I was at risk of fecal incontinence. And my surgeon, who's absolutely brilliant guy up here, he tried everything that he possibly could to sort out the fistula. Every new technique, he tried it on me. But we eventually had to, we reached the end of the textbook, and there was only one way to travel, and that was to go for the stoma. And to be quite honest, I wish I'd done it 10 years previously. It made such a huge difference to me. And in fact, recently I was consulting with him, and he said, you know, there is something we could try to reverse your stoma, because there's a new technique that we could try. And I said, no, I just don't want to go, I don't want to do it, because actually I find it fine having a stoma. I don't mind the stoma at all. Stoma's not the issue for me. It's peristomal hernias. That's the bugbear for me.
It's interesting that you said, I mean, you said that you wish you'd done it 10 years before. So how long were you suffering with these perianal fistulas for?
Over 20 years.
Oh, gosh, Brian, that's awful.
And yeah.
I fully advocate, I think medical treatment is amazing. But like you say, it's at the point where you probably miss out on almost 20 years of living a full life due to treatment of these fistulas. And I often think the same happens with IBD patients, because, and we're going back to that word stigma again, and I think there's so much of a stigma attached to having a stoma. People, and I think including medical professionals, avoid a stoma until the last minute. I mean, I remember when I had my stoma being told, you failed medical management, unfortunately, you're going to have a stoma. I bet you can guess what the two words were that stuck out there, failed and unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely.
And those are the two words I think that stick out for people then. So there is instantly your own personal stigma there. You have now got that stigma that I've failed something and this is an unfortunate thing that's going to happen to me.
I was part of that stigma. I remember once, when I was a young priest, I was newly ordained, and I was a hospital chaplain. And I spoke to this guy, this young guy, in his bed, and he was going down to surgery. And he said, you know, he wanted to talk to me. And I said, so what are you going down to surgery for? He said, oh, well, I'm going to get a thing called a stoma. I said, what's that? So he explained what it was, and I just talked to him and so on. But I remember thinking, I can't think of anything worse. That must be absolutely terrible. What a way to live. How's that guy going to... And it was only, you know, flicking forward 40 odd years, maybe 30 odd years, that I was in the same position. And I remember that guy. I remember him being in bed. And I remember my own internal default reaction was, oh my God, that's terrible. Can't think of anything worse. To having to come to terms with that and say, well, it's fine. But yeah, what you said at the start there, I think is really important, Hannah, that it all comes from lack of knowledge and it comes from fear. And I think it's the same with HIV and AIDS, same with stoma. It's been the same with mental health until relatively recently. People were frightened to talk about mental health. So hopefully these things are changing. The more people are a bit courageous, get educated, do stuff like this.
And the likes of you guys, I always say you guys as ambassadors, you guys are frontline in breaking this stigma. And, you know, social media does have its place. I've always been very much on the fence when it comes to social media. But actually, I think, you know, when you look at the likes of even some celebrities now, you know, you've got the likes of Adele Roberts, you've got Louise Thompson, you know, very young, very active social media people that are fully well displaying that they've got a stoma and talking about it loud and proud.
Yeah.
And those guys, along with you guys that are out there, obviously, like I say, you're fighting that front line. You are fighting to break those stigmas down. And the fact that we've now got new companies involved like the Lego Group with their new, that's just absolutely marvellous. You know, getting the Lego Group out there. Even soap operas, for the first time ever, we've got not one, but two characters in soaps that have got stomas. We are getting there. It's slow, but it's getting there. I feel like we're going in the right direction. I mean, I've had so many messages of my friends in the last sort of month or so when, you know, the characters in soaps came and go, oh my God, Hannah, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Like they're so excited. Because they know that when I had my stoma, sort of, I mean, I had my stoma formed back in 2011. So now we're talking 13 years ago. Social media was still very much in its infancy then. There wasn't much around then. So many people didn't even know what a stoma was, where I think a lot more people now are at least aware what a stoma is. They are at least aware of what one is now, which I think is a massive step forward. Even just having somebody knowing what one is.
Well, I mean, again, thinking back to the HIV and AIDS thing, the thing that broke the back of a lot of the stigma was Princess Diana talking to patients, you know, and hugging them and so on, because she was educated and she knew there wasn't a risk. And I think that with stomas, it's an entirely different range of, a different level of worry, but the stigma is still the same. And I think that having these young people are of the same order of importance in many ways, symbolically, as she was, and you know, in those days in the AIDS field. And I think that, you know, stuff like the Lego, I'm an older person now, but you know, you can just sort of think, God, that's fantastic. You know what we need? We need an emoji. We need a stoma emoji.
Who do we write to, Brian, to get an emoji?
I don't know. I've been droning on about this for years, but I think having a proper stoma emoji would be brilliant. It would help people.
Yeah, just like a little person with a little, almost like a little Sarah Lego character.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the Lego character, one of the most exciting things for me with the Lego Group character was the fact that she was at the water park as well. And again, that's all about that breaking stigmas and, you know, you're not just going to be in a hospital bed. You're not. I think when people think stoma, they think, oh, yeah, you're just ill. They don't think of people going out, living their lives, things like that. So to see, again, that it was done in such a positive manner as well, a really positive manner. It would have been very easy for them, I'm sure, to have created a hospital setting and
of course
they're in a hospital bed there. And but to have it in such a vibrant, colourful, active scene was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's great.
I fully admit, Sarah and the Heart Lake City Waterpark is on my Christmas list. I fully admit that. Coloplast Professional offers a lot of educational material for specialist nurses and healthcare professionals. Visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk to find out more. So looking back now, I'm going to think back to your transition point. So you worked with the HIV, AIDS and the heroin side of things. Then you became into the NHS.
Mm.
How did that transition happen there? Was that, again, part of you wanting to break down stigmas and things like that?
Yeah, so I was working in the AIDS field in Edinburgh, which was a kind of epicentre of the action in Europe at the time. And then I saw a job for the first ever HIV and AIDS prevention officer in the Highlands of Scotland. I just felt it was very intense in Edinburgh. It'd been a long, I'd worked there for quite a number of years, and I thought I'll get and try another part of the country. The only problem up here in those days was that the Highlands was a very, very conservative area, indeed very religiously conservative area. So coming up here with the AIDS sort of badge on was quite challenging, really. And, people were quite, well, there were a whole number of reactions to it. But my aim in those days was to get everybody talking about AIDS up here, because it was a complacency that we could never come here because, we're so clean living people, but we know that that's nonsense. So I started a campaign a number of campaigns, including beer mats with "Let's Talk About AIDS" was the logo, but it was also translated into Gaelic. So that hit the press. That really, those things, and then we built up conferences and we got the churches in to talk about it, and they made it very clear that I was going to be damned to hell forever, and all that sort of stuff. And it just got everybody talking about it, and we campaigned, and we did all sorts of strange things. We went around not all of the pubs. You couldn't possibly go through all of the pubs in Highland, but a great number of the pubs in Highland on a specific Saturday night, and we gave out free condoms, and we called it Safer Sex Saturday, which got a lot of publicity again. So again, I see sort of resonances with what's going on in the stoma community now, is that, these breaking down barriers, shaking the tree up, getting on the media, talking to artists, talking to other people who are involved, getting people talking about it. That's the key to breaking down stigma, in my experience.
Yeah, I always refer to the stoma side things in general, the poo taboo. And I loved what you said about using the beer mats and things like that as a way of creating awareness. And do you know what I instantly thought of then when you said that? It reminded me of the lovely Deborah James before she lost her battle with bowel cancer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, campaigned for more awareness when it came to checking your poo and things like that. And now you see it a lot more on toilet roll packaging, things like that.
Yeah.
It's all about creating those awareness. And we say, people don't know. But if you don't know something, you don't know something. And actually putting it in places where people are likely to find out, right? What a genius, sticking things on a beer mat.
Yeah. And you could do it with stoma. The guy having a pint next to you in the pub could have a stoma.
Yeah.
And you would never know. So I think it's all about busting the taboo, getting people talking about it. And that is happening now more than it's ever happened before. And I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Really? And now another thing that I've picked on that, and I know it was something we picked up on in last week's Ask the Ostomate, another passion of yours is peristomal hernia awareness and prevention.
Yeah.
Again, for those that haven't listened to last week's podcast, Brian spoke very passionately about how core exercises are something that should be very much spoken about with patients, not just post-surgery, but actually pre-surgery as well, to help with prevention. So what's your experience been with peristomal hernias, Brian?
I got my first peristomal hernia developed, I think, probably about 4 or 5 months after I got my stoma. I had had a bad cough in the ward, and I wondered whether or not that had something to do with it, but nobody told me to, put a pillow on top of my stoma when I was coughing and stuff like that. I don't remember any of that advice. So I developed the peristomal hernia, I didn't think too much of it because, to be honest, I didn't know what a hernia was. I thought a hernia was something that happened, you know, sort of deep inside your abdomen or something like that. But it suddenly became very apparent that this thing, the size of a fairly well-grown melon, started to bulge out. And it was very alarming and very disturbing and frightening, actually, until, you know, the stoma nurses were very good and they did. I don't really get on well with the support wear very much at all. So I've had this, but every time, as long as I've had a stoma, I've had a parastomal hernia. I had a blockage 2 years ago, which rushed me into hospital, and they resited my stoma onto the other side, and, you know, obviously I didn't have the parastomal hernia. Within a few months, it started again. So I'm just one of those people that is just going to follow me around, you know. But I did go on a research project with Sarah Russell on building up core muscles to combat parastomal hernias. I found it fascinating. I found it really, really good. And I think that having some core muscle building techniques before you have your stoma exercise and after you have your stoma exercise, supervised, of course, you know, but following guidelines and stuff like that, I think that that would help. It would have helped me, I think, you know. And yeah, so I do feel that it's an area that I don't think it's talked about very much. You know, it's a passing reference to it.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think people spend a lot of time discussing parastomal hernias. And they should, because it is far more of a pain than actually having a stoma is. Because, you know, it bulges. You've got to watch what you wear. You've got to watch how you walk. All that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you mentioned about those exercises. I mean, we do have within Colourpass, it's fairly recent, as in it certainly was around when I had my stoma form, but there's now the core four exercises, which are the four exercises to help get those core muscles going. So I'd highly recommend people to get hold of that. If they haven't already got it in their stoma department, certainly get it in there. Or for any ostomates out there, it is available on the Colourpass website as well. And that will certainly give you that. So we're not after people going off and doing a marathon run or, you know, 100 sit-ups or anything like that. These are very gentle exercises designed to build and support those core muscles, which, as any stoma nurse will know, when it comes to sighting, is so important that those core muscles are there for sighting. And I have my own experience when I had my stoma, mine actually prolapsed just not long before reversal, is, again, something at the time I wasn't aware of that could happen so much. And again, like you say, it's that... that thing that it's become so, what's already sort of an issue in your mind all of a sudden becomes an even greater issue because there's another prong to it almost. So,
yeah.
But mine was my own stupid fault. I lifted the turkey out of the oven on Christmas Day without bending my knees and did it all with my tummy muscles. So, there we go. My own stupid fault was lifting the turkey out of the oven. So, yes. Moral of the story is let somebody else cook the Christmas dinner, I feel.
Yeah, good idea. Good idea.
I feel that's a general moral to the story here. And we are upcoming to Christmas now. Now we're in November. We can start. I feel we can freely start to mention the C word now.
Yeah.
So to all our stomachs out there, be careful when lifting up the Christmas turkey.
Yeah, definitely.
But thank you so, so much for joining me, Brian. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you back on and to get to meet you properly rather than a fleeting meeting. So it's been an absolute pleasure and I really hope you come join me again. We will find out how to get the stoma emoji out there. We will. Maybe even if we have to do a trip onto Dragon's Den or something like that, we'll find a way.
Great, Hannah. It's been an absolute pleasure and thank you for all that you do for us. Ostomates, we are so lucky to have people like you supporting us, shouting for us. Colourpass UK and Ireland, absolutely phenomenal company, values driven, good people and fantastic products. So good luck, keep up.
Oh, thank you so, so much, Brian. Really thank you. And Thank you to everyone listening, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening. To see more of the wide variety of education we offer, please visit collarplusprofessional.co.uk. See you next time.
Stoma and Consonance Conversations is a Vibrant Sound Media production for Collarplast Professional.